Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, primary objective of our program is to help those of us at middle age to become unstuck from whatever is holding us back, from the unrestrained joy of simply being alive, from full utilization of our God-given intelligence and talents in service to others and loving how we do it, from warm, mutually satisfying relationships with all those around us, spouse and life partner, family members, co-workers, even casual acquaintances, and from purposeful living, full of positive goals for today and tomorrow, and from a spiritual connection with a divine intelligence and with others throughout our experience. And like a lot of you, for 30 years of my adult life, I was stuck within self-constructed boundaries, most of them implanted in my subconscious when I was growing up. In effect, I was sleepwalking through my adult life. How about you? Do limitations and negative thinking dominate your life? Do any of these maladies sound familiar? You suffer from depression and anxiety, and anxiety disorders affect a startling 18% of the U.S. population. Your goals in life are shrinking as you grow through middle age, as you grow older. You find yourself fighting to hang on to a career and lifestyle that isn't really very fulfilling. You doubt on your ability to move ahead. You battle victim mentality, blaming others for setbacks and failure to accomplish more. And you tend to look on the negative, find fault, and make derogatory observations about people around you. I know I had that tendency for years. And you resent others who have more money, have built successful businesses, or hold prestigious positions, thinking maybe they just got all the breaks. And you struggle to form new relationships or are hesitant to reach out to others for help. At middle age, in effect, are you stuck far short of where you want to be while continuing to worry about the future? What if there was a no-nonsense but uplifting approach to gain control of your emotions and to begin living up to your potential and staying happy? Interested? Well, if so, we have an ideal guest, Dr. Johnny Lopes, who offers advice on reinventing yourself at middle age or at any age. And Dr. Lopes is a board-certified practicing psychiatrist for adults, adolescents, and children. He's a former team psychiatrist for the Brooklyn Nets and the NBA. He's an accomplished actor and film producer and has starred in numerous stage productions and major TV advertising campaigns. He's author of the brand-new book, Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. And he's also an amateur marathon runner and a pretty fine neighborhood hoops player. A true Renaissance man. Hello, Dr. Lopes, and welcome. It's indeed a privilege to have you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. It's a privilege to be on your show today.
Well, is it true that negative people not only have a greater risk of depression, but also of poor health and more physical ailments, perhaps even life-threatening diseases? Is there a connection there?
Absolutely. I'll get right into another anecdote. I was just having lunch before I came to this call today and met with friends who are a couple, and I asked the wife how was her father. Last time we spoke, she had told me that he had developed a form of cancer. Ooh. And things were very concerning for him. Because she's just, I gave her a copy of the book, so she was inspired, and in the inspiration of reading the book a little bit, she wanted to inform me that once her father got that type of diagnosis, with her sort of support and motivation, he was willing to make some lifestyle changes, and he began to rectify some of his unhealthy relationships with his wife, his older brother, who he hadn't spoken to for years. He moved away from excessive use of nicotine and alcohol.
Yeah.
He started meditating and reading some self-help books himself. And he worked on his diet. And they're finding, just by through some causal relationships, that some of the lifestyle changes the doctors are saying are helping assist him through this process to overcome his cancer. So there's an incredibly uplifting experience that I just shared an hour ago about how there is such a connection from our mental and our physical and our overall well-being.
Yeah, that's, we've had a number of examples of that on this program in the past, but you indicate that we're far more in control of our emotional state than we may think. What is the one key tool to feeling better about yourself? Is there one thing that can get us started?
I think it's trying to take a more proactive approach. I find a lot of folks who come to my office and they're sort of struggling or looking for answers. A lot of times the answers or the lack thereof is within the passivity of the way they modulate their life. Life in a way can upset them so much that they've desensitized themselves to being able to tolerate some of their emotional experiences. So what they do, not purposely, is they just put up little walls or find easy escapes to try not to have to face the realities of life. So either they'll start isolating themselves socially, they won't put themselves out there for better positions or be proactive about asking for other job opportunities. And then more concerning to me is they'll use numbing agents like alcohol or marijuana to stabilize their emotions to, again, having to face the hurdles. And as chapter one of my book, the reason why I started with chapter one as it is, it's about my story to become a marathon runner. And I'm really proud of that chapter because just like life, you can't just wake up and say, oh, I'm going to be a marathon runner. And I tried, in my little pompousness, I tried that, and it didn't get me far. I started getting injuries, I was hurt, and I was very humbled by the process.
Yeah.
But you have to go into the pain. You have to have feel the pain of a mile, 2 miles. But your body gets used to it. It's a wonderful organism, and if we slowly desensitize ourselves, it doesn't hurt as much, and we can continue to grow and take that proactive approach to want to get stronger.
So if I'm 30 pounds overweight, I shouldn't just go out and run the Des Moines Marathon?
That would probably not be a great idea, no.
Well, you mentioned so much that a lot of the emotion that we feel has to do with our language, and that these days negative talk seems to be everywhere in social media, the talk radio, reality TV.
Yeah.
People use negative words to agitate, complain, put down, express anger and frustration.
Yeah.
Can you offer some tips on how we can shift from negative to positive language, and perhaps that would lead us emotionally to improve the situation?
Yeah, I think the first is insight. I would ask all the readers to, if they can, take a day, take a morning, take a period of time where you're interacting with folks around yourself,
yeah,
and try to slow down and catch yourself and find out how many times you might have used some more negative jargon to describe the people and places around you.
Describe yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a great saying in medicine when you go through med school, the eyes can't see what the mind doesn't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not going to be able to do what other seasoned physicians can see in terms of disease processes if you've never learned what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So in the same way, I think for all of us, it's about that insight. Your mind has to start having the recognition that, like, oh, I do this. So a lot of my homework,
yeah,
the first 2 weeks is take 2 weeks, come back to me. Try to don't work on anything. Just tell me,
yeah,
come back in 2 weeks. What situation scenarios did you recognize that you might have said, it's useless, this is never going to work out, I don't like that person, my parents are morons, you know,
yeah.
So many different ways. And then we start trying to facilitate and modulate some of the adjectives and the narratives. I saw a girl who is going away for the college, she's in college, she's going away for the summer.
Oh.
And we were reflecting on the year. And
yeah,
she's had her struggles.
Yeah.
And she said, in summation, Dr. Lopps, it's been a hard year. I haven't done as well academically as I've wanted to do. I've been quite lonely. I haven't really developed the friendships I've required to be, and my professors have been difficult. And I looked at her and I said, that's interesting, and I understand why, how you can use, but you can't, let me tell you, from seeing you every week for the last year, I can easily walk out of this office and be like, hey, you know that young lady I've been seeing? What an amazing year she's had.
Yeah.
She's persevered through another year being alone in New York City, going to an amazing art school that's quite challenging,
yeah,
and she's doing well academically. She's
yeah
been able to have 3 to 4 shows presented in Brooklyn in various art galleries.
Yeah.
And as I'm doing this, I could see her eyes are widening about how she could see how it's so simple just for me to switch the narrative. That it's,
yeah,
our
isn't
attitude.
It amazing how everything she said was negative, and yet you can turn it around and make positive statements about the same circumstances.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So a lot of it's just our attitude. It's, so it's the identification, it's the attitude and the willingness to understand. And again, psychoeducation, a lot of times when folks are coming to my office, is just as helpful to say, hey, did you know that the way you use your language, the way you think about things can develop this persistence of hostility towards yourself,
yeah,
and self-loathing? So a lot of that's just some education can go a long way.
And there's so much when you think about the friends and the situations you place yourself in, if you're around people that are always knocking other people and are always negative about politics, or you know, you're constantly listening to talk radio. I don't say
not
Rush
your
Limbaugh
show
or somebody like that, not our show, but
right,
Rush Limbaugh or somebody like that that's always knocking one political party or another. Just
right,
can really affect your total attitude. I think, as we always say, you can't always affect what happens around you, but you can to some degree control that by the situations you put yourself in, but you can certainly control how you react to the circumstances around you.
Yeah, and for the listeners and for anybody who I hope is willing to pick up the book and take a good read, I think as we were speaking before the show even started, you know, life comes enough with its own challenges. There's going to be a lot of trials and tribulations. And like you said, there's a great quote out there, 90% of life happens to us. It's the 10% of what we can control in response to it is the way we perceive it.
Yeah.
And in that 10%, you get to choose the people that you're going to surround yourself with.
Yeah,
and why make life harder and surround yourself with toxic people or toxic programs or toxic radio shows,
yeah,
that are only going to continue to put on your skin that hostility and anger that just makes the way we're going to look at life so much more harsh. Why not find ways that alleviate some of that and find hobbies and people and places that soothe us and help us regulate ourselves?
Yeah, well, a lot of us, you point out in your book, a lot of us suffer from automatic negative thoughts, like I mentioned when a driver cuts you off, he's a rude, obnoxious jerk, you know, that kind of thing. Is there a tactic to help us overcome this thinking before it turns into a negative emotion and ruins our whole day? How do you react, in a more positive vein?
If I'm going to give one tip to the listeners today, I always tell folks, you can't just allow your thoughts to be like a wave in the ocean where you're the surfer on a surfboard, and wherever the wave takes you, you go with it. Because if we do, you know, our emotions are a complex phenomenon, and if we always just follow our emotions instinctually, it's going to lead us to a lot of dangerous and not healthy experiences.
Yeah.
So what I tell folks to do is you need to be a little bit more curious about the origins of your thoughts. Almost become like Sherlock Holmes, to make it a little fun, and start, put a little pipe in your mouth and put a little hat and live in Baker Street. And when you have a thought, be curious, be inquisitive. Like, what's the evidence for that thought? So the guy cuts us off. What is my evidence that that guy is a jerk and on purposely he was looking out for my car to cut me off because he knew I was having such a good morning that he wanted to undo that? And a lot of times when I ask the folks in my sessions, I'll say, what was your evidence to find that something might happen X, Y, and Z? A lot of times people say, I don't have any. And so I say, well, then where are you going with this? So a lot of it, the simple rule is to challenge your thoughts, to start practicing, do you have really valid evidence to suggest the truth of your thinking, or is your thinking, as chapter one is called, your thoughts are not your best friend and they're taking you to places that are not in your best interest.
Yeah, and the fact that this guy cut in front of you, has that really impacted your day that much? I mean,
yeah.
Has that really slowed you down that much?
And I think a lot of people get a lot of aha moments when I say, because I think it puts it in perspective for them, what was if that guy was you and you just found out that maybe a close family member was sick in the hospital and the doctor said you only have 10 minutes to get here? You know, you're going to do what you got to do. It can happen to all of us. So I always ask people, think of all the possibilities of why someone's choosing to make that behavior. It's probably not personalized, directed towards you.
No, probably not.
Well,
have most of us become too wrapped up? This is another point you make in your book, that so many of us come so wrapped up in concern over how important we are to others. And what's the best way to gain validation and admiration? Should we stop attempting to demonstrate we're better than another? Or how do we really gain admiration from other people rather than just, you know, showing off on social media or some of the things a lot of us do?
Yeah. Well, I think the start is to undo even that question. I don't think any of us should be waking up looking for validation from others.
Yeah.
I think I steal a little bit of this chapter through my own growth, but also a little bit through some of the tenets of Buddhism, where it's learning to self-love ourselves. I think we need to wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night, making sure we're in a good relationship with us and not comparing ourselves to the people around us or what it looks like and perceives on social media as the gauge to where we stand in sort of a spectrum of importance in this world.
Yeah, how many friends do you have on Facebook?
Exactly.
The most important measure of how important you are.
I mean, it's so wacky. If we're going to use fame and fortune as the identifier to gauge who's worthy, I mean, does that mean only people in New York or Hollywood are worth, their lives are the only ones worth waking up to? I mean, nobody else in the Midwest, the other, they're just passing life aimlessly because they don't have some of the recognition that others might have in other cities. I mean, that's ridiculous. There's so many beautiful...
you can make it where you are. You can make it anywhere, right?
Yeah, well, that's a different story. But my message to the listeners is that no matter where you are, there are wonderful opportunities, I'm sure, to nurture yourself in the form of education, the form of volunteer work, learning more about yourself and some spiritual work.
As I like to put it, you can only be a big person in the neighborhood or the area where you are. The people you come in contact with and what you do to serve others, those around you, and that's what really matters, not what, picture shows up on YouTube.
Absolutely. Right, and I think the hallmark of my book at the end of the day is, I want folks to go back, not that I want folks, but there's simpler ways to live life, and if we are welcoming of some of the simpler things that we can do, then life ultimately can become a lot more fair and pleasant to us on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, if folks are passionate or looking to nurture their lives in more interesting, creative ways, keep doing it. Of course, follow your passions. But don't allow not having attained the passion each day to be a hallmark of how you feel. You know, things take time. So find other little things each day to be happy about where you are.
This is a fascinating comment you make. I think you have a whole chapter devoted to it. But what's the difference between being nice and being kind? And should we always strive to be nice when we're around other people? And can actually, as you point out, can being nice actually trigger depression?
Yeah, I see that a lot in my practice. They just through variables and their upbringing, they didn't develop that healthy assertiveness that we all need to learn how to advocate for. So just as much as we need to love ourselves, we also need to learn how to appropriately advocate for ourselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks don't nurture that skill probably through high school going into college. So what ends up happening is they are unable to express themselves in a way that sets healthy boundaries, and they find that they start doing things for others and become a little bit of a low self-esteem. One of the ways they feel good about themselves is when others say, thank you for helping me with this, thank you for taking care of that, thank you for going above and beyond. And in a way, it almost becomes a new form of a drug where they start developing highs only by getting credit from others because of how hard they work and how much they're willing to sacrifice. But invariably, if that's the style you take, you're going to lead to burnout because people are going to recognize it. Bosses are going to recognize it, and they're going to identify that you're the person who never says no.
Yeah,
and they're going to take advantage of it. Hey, Billy, you know there's a thing that's due on Monday. Can you come into the office tomorrow? I'm going to be at a golf outing. But you and the person just is so freaked out that if they say no, they're going to upset their boss and they might get fired. Again, all these automatic thoughts to which there's no evidence, and they burn themselves out and they start internalizing the emotion. They start getting anxious or depressed as a result of it. So there's ways to be kind to people, but within kindness we set boundaries. We're okay with disappointing others. We're okay with saying no to others appropriately.
And being kind, we don't really asking for nothing in return, whereas you pointed out being nice, you really want recognition from the other person, or you probably want something from that person. And it's not really the real sincere, true desire to help someone else that kindness is. I like that distinction you make.
Exactly. Yes, that's and it's on. I see a young lady every Thursday who works in the film industry, and you know, if the boss is in that industry, they're like hawks. They'll look for that's who they're looking for. The 20-year-olds, 20, 25-year-olds who are just so excited about being in New York because they want to make it, and they'll just sort of get burned out. They'll just make them come to their office and do all this menial tasks day in and day out, hoping that, but after a while they don't get paid more, they don't get more duties, and it leads to a difficult situation.
Well, here's a skill I often have a problem with personally, especially around my wife, as she points out a lot, and that's active listening. As you point out, it's vital to healthy and successful communication. But what are a few learning skills to active listening that can be practiced and improved on? How do we become effectively an active listener?
The first recommendation is just interest in what the other person has to say.
That's true. So many people are so wrapped up in how they're going to respond to another rather than really listening.
There's a more curiosity to how their retort is going to sound or how quickly your wife starts talking about doing the dishes and your mind is like, how can I quickly avoid and come up with a really interesting, curious, intelligent comeback? And while you're doing that, there's no question that people on the other side of the table are in tune, that you're not paying attention, you're not there, you're not present. And especially coming back to New York, I find that a lot of folks are frustrated with friendships because they're finding that friends are not really incorporating what they're saying. They're not interested. It seems like they're only using the time spent hoping to get to the conversation about how can you help me now. So a lot of the listening chapter and the healthy friendships are connected in terms of trying to choose. But in going back to, we have to be curious. We have to maintain that childhood curiosity when it comes to other people and being supportive and being empathic and recognizing that there's a reason that person feels like it's important for them to say what they say. And not everything, of course, is going to always be important, but we always should give everybody the opportunity to express what they're feeling and to support that and find ways to healthily report.
I know you point out a thing that I have problems with often when my mind is somewhere else, and that's maintaining eye contact. I know my wife, I'll be listening to her, but I'll be looking at something else, and she always gets angry and thinks I'm not paying attention when I don't really look her in the eye. And
That's a skill again. A lot of these things are skills. If you didn't practice them, if we were a little shy as a child and we never sort of mastered that tool, then that will, over the years, continue to be sort of the automatic way we will converse with people. So a lot of these things are tools that it's not anybody's fault if we didn't sort of grow that tool, because a lot of it's based on the way we interacted with our families as children, all the different variables, where we grew up, how we grew up, what we faced.
Yeah.
But as we start this conversation, a lot of it is not feeling judged or defensive if we recognize there's something in us that could be improved on, and
yeah.
willing to almost like a marathon again, willing
yeah.
to put some proactive efforts to say, I want to work on this. I'm young,
yeah.
I'm middle-aged, I'm, you know, there's an opportunity for me to be a better person every day.
Yeah,
you know?
I love how in the, one of the chapters of your book, you point out that you can be mentored or learn something from the guy down three offices down who's been 10 years with the company and hasn't really progressed that high, but he has a lot of knowledge he can share with you, the neighbor, you don't...
Anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you said, like, you know, the Des Moines Marathon.
Yeah.
I've never been to Des Moines, so you seem like you might know more about Des Moines than I do, and so if we were to end this conversation, just chit-chat for a little bit, I'm sure in 10 minutes you could provide me a plethora of new information about Des Moines that I wouldn't have known, and for those 10 minutes, you were technically considered my mentor.
Yeah.
Because maybe
yeah.
somewhere down the line, I will be in a business meeting, and someone will say, when I was growing up in Des Moines, and I could say, hey, you mean... the Des Moines Marathon, like you did that? He might be like, whoa, how do you know that? And I'd be like, well, because I know a guy who knew the Des Moines.
Yeah.
And that way we're just generating more information, more knowledge that we can use to make those type of connections. So I always think that type of learning for everyone can give us nuances
yeah.
that might enhance us in other ways.
Well, let's talk a bit about your new book, Reinvent Yourself,
yeah.
Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. Who is the book written for, basically? Is it...
I think the book is written at its core for anybody who is looking to have an active read that is giving you a little kick in the behind to say, hey, are you struggling? Like, let's take a look. Read this book. Dig deep and ask yourself, are there things that you might work on? And so I think anybody can really appreciate the utility of the book, as long as they're willing to be open-minded and take the read. You know,
well,
I know
your book explains and illustrates 11 practical skills, and 11 is a,
mm-hmm.
how do you suggest the readers approach your book? It's a lot of stuff to take in all at
yeah.
one time.
I think one chapter at a time. I think a lot of folks can maybe read it once to sort of get the gist of where it's going.
Yeah.
But I do say in the introduction, take it a chapter at a time. Don't
yeah.
rush to another chapter if you feel like you haven't given yourself the ample opportunity to explore yourself. So in
yeah,
a way, it
practice.
Almost reads like therapy. You know, in therapy,
yeah.
we're not going to okay, so you had this conflict, you have this conflict. All right, week one, we're going to do conflict number one. Week two, we're going to do conflict number two. And 3 weeks in, the person might be like, wait, hold up, I'm still kind of trying to figure out conflict one. So it's really taking it slow and going at your pace.
Yeah, I've read so many self-help books over the years that, you know, made me feel good for a few days, and then I pretty much forget everything I've read.
Exactly.
Or there's so much to take in, and
mm-hmm.
it goes
yeah.
in one ear basically and out the other.
Yeah,
it's
and
really
that's why
good.
I thought the personal anecdotes would at least make it less bland. I want folks to have the opportunity to say, I'm reading this person's journey. This person went through this. He's telling me that it's possible. He's telling me that he's persevered through these things. He's telling me that it takes time and practice and patience. So I'm hoping that maybe because there's a personal voice in the words, that folks will be more likely to sit back down again with it and go through relive the journey the way I did.
Well, where's the best place to preview your book and obtain it? Where do you suggest we go for that?
So anyone can learn more about me on my website, drjohnnylops.com, which is drjohnnylops.com, drjohnnylops.com. But if they want to go right to the book, both Amazon and barnesandnoble.com both have it on sale. You can type in the search, Johnny Lops, J-O-H-N-N-Y-L-O-P-S, and
yeah.
the book will come up, and they can preview it there. I think there's a free chapter that they can read the introduction, and they can purchase it if they're interested.
Yeah, that's it. Well, in conclusion, I had an opportunity to read Dr. Lops' book, and it was very inspiring. And like he said, it's full of personal stories, and it was really interesting to see a couple of close calls he had with a little trash talk on the neighborhood basketball courts, and there's a number of other fascinating stories in there of when he tried to impress this girl with how much smarter he was than she was, and it didn't work out too well.
It didn't work out. Rode the bus alone.
Yeah. And what's so wonderful is it's not just a bunch of theory, but they offer solid practical advice for you. And Dr. Lopps is both an expert psychiatrist and a skilled storyteller, and I think that's a great combination, and it's a useful roadmap for any of us that are interested in reaching our full potential for a joyful and fulfilling second half of life. And thank you so much, Dr. Lopps, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate that.
And I suggest all of you who are interested preview that book. Once again, what's the title?
Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All.
That pretty much says it all, and thanks so much, Dr. Lopps, for joining us, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Dr. Johnny Lopes has given us some essential tools to reinvent yourself, and to close our program, here is a good reason why you should reinvent yourself. Let me tell you my story. Well, shortly before I began my journey to renewal, I experienced a deeply disheartening dream. In my dream, I died and went to hell. At least I think it was hell. It certainly wasn't heaven. The dream was not terrifying. I did not encounter fire and brimstone. I did not observe lost souls crying out in agony. I didn't discover Satan running around with a pitchfork. Instead, I simply was forced to continue my then current daily life experience over and over again for all eternity. In my dream, I realized that I was dead, but I observed no real alteration in my daily pattern of existence. I faced the same deadlines and pressures that I had been working under for years. Finances remained uncertain. Joy was absent. Tension continued to fill the air. Our family took no vacations. There was little, if any, recreation. And the promise of a brighter tomorrow was gone forever. Because I did not admire my work and had nothing to look forward to, I found myself joylessly facing the same old for all eternity. When I awoke, I knew that it was time for a change. Our Creator intends for each one of us to experience a joyful, purposeful existence before and after death. And if my then current life experience had become a role model for hell, I needed to abandon my present pattern of living sooner rather than later. And please do not wait for a similar nightmare to spur you into action. You are not placed on this earth to experience continual pressure or the intolerable depression of life without hope. Today, not tomorrow, is the appropriate moment to begin positive transformation of your life. When you think about it, there's absolutely no valid reason for you to remain miserable and unfulfilled, or even partially but not wholly joyful and fulfilled. Please do not lull yourself into the future trap, believing that somehow, without your active intervention, things will work out and get better on their own as time goes by. Because 9 times out of 10, if not 99 out of 100, they won't get back without your active intervention and planning for a positive future. Your life is not likely to improve dramatically anytime soon without that active personal intervention. But once you convince yourself that each new day represents a clean slate, a fresh opportunity to advance a positive agenda, and you have some positive goals and objective in mind, with each day a small stepping stone to your ultimate success and victory, who is to deny your ultimate triumph? Can anyone prevent you from enjoying life today? Without question, the Creator is on your side. In God's eyes, every person on earth deserves lifelong peace of mind and fulfillment. And is another individual holding you back? You can and must divorce yourself emotionally, if you can't physically, at least emotionally divorce yourself from any intractable person who intentionally or unintentionally causes you discomfort. In truth, no one in the world benefits from your continued unhappiness. And are you holding yourself back? You know, you and I may be our own worst critics. Well, fear of failure or fear of the future is not helping you or anyone else, so why should it continue? And for a comprehensive step-by-step roadmap to midlife renewal, I would highly recommend my own book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards, and you can find my book on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or my own website, middleagerenewal.com, and it's available both in ebook form and in printed form. And I would highly recommend, if you really are serious about midlife renewal, you get a hold of my book, and it will give you some excellent guidance on how to get there. And that's our program for today. Thank you for joining us, and tune in again next week when we'll talk about why middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.